The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, November 30th, 2007, and this is episode number 105. I am Bob Hayes, your host here this week, as I am most weeks, although astute listeners will notice that we skipped a week last week, and that was because of Thanksgiving and all of that stuff. So I took a day off, and it was actually kind of nice. I am almost thinking that I might go down to a semi-weekly schedule here during the winter break, but we're going to see. Right now, we're planning on having a show this week, and we'll have a show next week and that sort of thing. So we'll just see how things turn out. We got a fairly short show this week. Had a call with Jules. We talked about the testing that went on in her Jerez this past week, with most of the teams represented, with the exception of Suzuki, that did their own private secret test down at Phillip Island in Australia at the same time. And Team KR was not there, and also Tim Pramac was not there, but Ducati was well represented with some test riders. The Honda teams were there, Yamaha, and it was some interesting stuff, some mixed results all around, as to be expected from a test. Everybody's out there doing their own thing. Some are running qualifier tires, some are not, that sort of thing. Everybody's working on setup. Some interesting news that came out of that: Casey Stoner was injured. He hurt his shoulder, I do believe it was, on that. And Rossi went out for all 3 days, but called it early on the third day because he was having some troubles with his hand. And other than that, things were pretty much all over the map. And Jules and I will talk about that a little bit later. And we're also going to have a product review, doing a review of an Axio Fuse backpack, a hard shell backpack for motorcycle riders. It's kind of a cool product, and I talk a little bit about one of those there at the end of the show. Before we get to all of that, I'd like to send a big shout out thank you to Kevin McEwen and George Nanisto. Nanisto, hope I didn't massacre your pronunciation and last name there, George. I apologize on that one. But both Kevin and George were kind enough to send in a donation to MotoGPOD, help pay for the bills and the bandwidth and the Skype host, Skype bills and all that sort of stuff. And I do appreciate it a lot, guys. Thank you very, very much. So, other stuff that happened since the last time we had a show. Let's see, on 11/16, which was the last show that we had, November 16th, that night we had the broadcast of The Kentucky Kid on MTV, which was the show about Nicky Hayden. It was a 2-hour-long movie focusing on Hayden's efforts through the season. It kind of started off with his finishing the 2006 season, picks up the championship. They actually spent quite a bit amount of time on that, almost half an hour. And then the remaining hour and a half sort of touched on several of the races through the 2007 season, talking about Hayden's efforts and ups and downs and all of that kind of thing. Now, MotoGP fans that are familiar with the sport are not going to learn a whole lot of new information. You'll get some sort of interesting side view, side notes, side effects, whatever you want to call them, into, you know, Nicky Hayden's sort of life. One thing was, I cannot believe that the guy, after 4 years in MotoGP, cannot even order a meal in a fast food joint in Spanish. So I'm wondering if that was staged or something or what. And if it's not, Nicky, you got to pick up some Spanish. It's not that hard to order, you know, Hugo, instead of trying to say juice, juice, juice over and over again to this poor girl behind the counter in Spain. You are in their country after all, and you probably spend a lot of time there, what with the 3 GPs and the Spanish tie-in and everything. It's like that. It's not that difficult. So, not criticizing Nicky's lack of language skills, if that's what it was. Other than that, I thought the movie was really pretty good. Hopefully, it brought in some new fans to the sport. It did come on right after an episode of Jackass for real quality television viewing that I just noticed had the guy that Bam, what's his name, with a shaky tattoo on his back thing, was snarfing up a earthworm through his nose. So, viewers that enjoyed that sort of thing would then be launched into MotoGP. Hopefully we got some other people that weren't necessarily watching the earthworm snarfing and just kind of tuned in for the MotoGP. Not that anything is wrong with Jackass. This is pure quality television, folks. But in any event, if you did not see that show on MTV, there's a couple of things that you can do to watch it. One, MTV has put it up on their website. The link is rather long, so rather than try to read it, you can either go to the MTV.com site, and it's in their Overdrive section. And, of course, I will put a link to that on the MotoGPOD.com site. But if you want to do a search on MTV.com in their Overdrive section, you can see it in, I think it's in like 9 segments, and they show the entire thing there on broadband. Or if you're like me and you like to watch your television on television, I know that at least in the next week and a half or so, the show is scheduled to be rebroadcast on Saturday, December 8th on MTV2. So the slightly less MTV-ish affiliate or whatever it's called. Saturday, December 8th, MTV2, and that's at 2 p.m. Pacific time. Now, for international listeners, if you have not yet had that Kentucky Kid movie show up on your version of MTV in whatever country you happen to live in, contact your cable provider. Contact the local MTV guys. You know, go to their website in your country and send in a link to their thing. Say, we want the Kentucky Kid. Let them know that you appreciate MotoGP. You may not be a Nikki Hayden fan, and that's fine. I understand that. But I know you're a MotoGP fan. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to this show. So let's tell MTV, do us here in the States, please, do us a favor and let them know how popular MotoGP is throughout the world. And maybe that will build up MotoGP's fan base in the States. It's all good publicity. It boils down to that same old thing. You know, I don't care what you say about me as long as you spell my name right, that sort of a thing. And this is true. And I'm not saying that the Kentucky Kid was bad and that they're, you know, I don't care what you say about me or anything like that. My only fault was it was a little simplistic, but I totally understand that. And that's exactly how it should have been. It was not meant to be, you know, faster, the movie Faster, or DTK, the Kentucky Kid, and all that, the Doctor, the Texas Tornado, and the Kentucky Kid. It was meant to be an intro to MotoGP, and they did an excellent job with that. And I'm really glad that we got to talk to Kelly Welsh in last week, November 16th episode, about the show, and I hope that she's happy with the results from the ratings and all of that good stuff there on MTV. So, let's see. Other than that, like I said, we're doing some testing over there in Jerez. Some interesting stuff. Let's cover real quick. One thing that I noticed, and I think this is almost one of the most interesting things about the whole testing thing, is because we know that Rossi and Lorenzo are on the same team, but not really because of the whole separate team things with Bridgestone and Michelin and all of that. Yamaha sends out press releases. They send out the sort of fan-based press release that's really easy to sign up for at their Yamaha MotoGP site. And then they also send out one that's more a press release, and you have to sign up through the press contact credentials and all that. And they're not very serious about making sure you have press credentials, because I get it. But there is somewhat of a difference. And the one that they're sending out to the sort of press release is now separate. You get two. One is for Valentino Rossi and one is for Jorge Lorenzo, whereas the sort of fan base one, they've combined the two into one, and you just get one press release. Thought that was a little interesting. Let's see. There on the last day, we'll just talk about day test three, because one and two, Jules and I talk about in our call. But last day there in Jerez, day three, lap times, Danny Pedrosa topped out the timesheets, 138.562. Nikki Hayden was right behind him. He must have put on a qualifying tire. And then here's a telling thing, Jorge Lorenzo, number three, 139.464. So he's about a second off of Pedrosa's pace, but I'm looking for that to improve considerably. Lorenzo is going to be a force to be reckoned with. I guarantee that. Then Andre Dovizioso. Jules and I talked a lot about rookies and in our call, and I think that's also very telling that he's up there in the fourth position. Shinya Nakano coming up. He's back on the Bridgestones. That's good for him. Colin Edwards, sixth place. That's nice. Alex DeAngelis. So look at what we've got there in our top seven. You've got three rookies and some guys that we haven't seen in the top, you know, for quite some time. Now, this is just testing. It's all completely meaningless, but it's still sort of fun to go down the timesheets and take a quick look at that. James Toseland, maybe starting off to a slow start. I'm looking for James Toseland to do well in the season, but as Jules and I talk about in our call, James is a bit of an enigma, if you will. And I think he's very, very analytical about his riding. He's very careful, so you're not going to see him top in the timesheets necessarily, but it could also be that he simply can't. So I'm not too sure exactly what to say about Toseland there. Randy Dupuynier, 9th. John Hopkins, 10th on the Kawasaki Fast in the straight line, but not so good at Jerez with its tight and twisty circuit. Valentino Rossi, 11th. He called it quits early on day 3 because of his hand injury. Then Marco Melandri, our random number generator, is not coming to grips with the Ducati too well in Jerez. Tadayuki Okada riding for Honda in 13th to Nicolo Canepa and Ducati test rider 14th. Got a picture of him, hopefully on the website if I get it up there. And West on the Kawasaki Vietorani Guareschi on a Ducati 16th. And Shinichi Ito, test rider for Bridgestone, was down there at the bottom on 17th. So there's our times for day 3's testing in Jerez. This is going to end the testing through almost the end of January. The next scheduled MotoGP test is January, the weekend of January 22nd. There's a ban all through December. I believe that the teams can do private testing almost any time in January, but I wouldn't look for any of them to be doing a whole lot more before that time there in January. So that's going to mean that MotoGPOD, we've got to have some other stuff to talk about. And we will find some stuff, I guarantee it. There will be news no matter what about MotoGP. Somehow, some way, somewhere, there will be some kind of news going on about MotoGP. And then we'll also see if we can do some kind of other interesting stuff concerning MotoGP. Hopefully some tech segments or something like that. Just kind of depends on how much time I have and how much interesting stuff I think I can come up with. And if you have suggestions, feel free to send them in. Bob@MotoGPOD.com is the address. I always like hearing from people. And now I can't make any rash promises that I'm going to come up with some fantastic sort of tech segment thing. Sometimes I get some emails where it's almost like I'm wondering, it's like, do these people think I really know that much? Because I don't. I'm just a fan like all of you. I'm just a fan that happens to like to get together here on Thursdays and talk to myself for, about an hour about it. So I think that's enough for today's intro. I think I covered the basics there. Thank you to Kevin McEwen and George Anisto. Thank you to Kelly Walsh for her interview. Link to Kentucky Kid, yada, yada, doodle. Let's get on with the rest of the show. All right. We got Jules on the phone. How you doing, Jules?
Good morning, Bob. Doing good?
Good, good. So we've got some stuff to talk about with the tests that just took place at Jerez. That's the last test before the December test ban. And really, other than that, a little bit quiet in MotoGP. But, we'll find some interesting stuff to talk about.
I think everything's settled in.
Yeah, exactly. And some interesting stuff did happen in Jerez. Not exactly world-shattering, but not too bad. First of all, Stoner did well on the first day, top of the time sheets, but then day 2 he was injured. So that allowed Pedrosa to grab the top spot there, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, there was a poll actually on the MotoGP site about whether Honda would outperform Ducati at the Jerez test, and it's kind of bogus now because it's not really. Ducati has not been that strong at the test. It's really been Stoner that's been strong.
Right, exactly, and also and without Stoner, you don't have a. It's not a valid comparison, really.
But it's really. But it's really, it's all about the tires and the bike.
Oh yeah, of course. So nothing else. Speaking of tires, though, Rossi did real well on his first outing on Bridgestones.
Very impressive. I think that him coming in with still recovering from the injury, I'm sure that his hand is painful. That's a pretty impressive start. I don't know where I read this, but he said that he's been watching the way Bridgestones ride on the basically how they act all season. And so it's not like that big of a surprise that he already kind of had an idea of what they could do. I think that's a really typical Rossi statement to make that, riding behind Casey Stoner, he could see the way the tire grip works. And I mean, he does talk a lot about how he manages grip on tire grip, as he races. Even the way he looks at the ground, he's one of the few riders that doesn't look through a turn. He looks he's looking at the ground to look at where there might be a small patch of asphalt that might not grip as well or whatever along his line. I mean, it's you know, being at that at the very edge of grip, he's always looking for that extra whatever. So anyway, he kind of knew what the Bridgestones could do, and sure enough, you know, he went out there the first time, the first day, and was very, very fast. He immediately was faster than Colin and obviously Lorenzo and Tausland.
I think it's telling of just how supernaturally good he is. I mean, that you can, you know, pick up some sort of mental notes, you know, if, you know, how much of that is smoke and mirrors, how much of it's true or whatever, but basically pick up some mental notes about, here's what I'm going to do on the Bridgestones just from watching another rider riding a different bike and all of that. And then he gets the Bridgestones and lo and behold, he applies those mental notes, I think.
It also speaks volumes about how incredible his team is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know,
some interesting stuff, like I said, all around. It's going to be a good season. It will be. I don't know, though, that we're going to see a whole big shift away from what we had last year, where the sort of the second half of the race might start turning into a procession still. We might still be in for that, just because of the nature of the 800s.
Yes, there was that very interesting, I think very, very telling blip about Michael Schumacher going out on the Ducati.
Right, that was at Valencia.
Yeah, and he didn't, you know, going within 5 seconds of the race pace and per lap, which is, you know, it starts to seem like, whoa, that's pretty amazing. And then Colin Edwards talked about it at length a few days later and said, well, this is the state of affairs in MotoGP. Like the last time that Schumacher got out on a MotoGP bike, he was like 15 seconds off, and now he's only 5 seconds off. Is it because Michael Schumacher has gotten to be a better motorcycle rider? Absolutely not. It's because the electronics have gotten so good that you can really just whack the throttle open and go. And to get that last 5 seconds is all about how much of that electronics you turn off. And this is very interesting, kind of, because, you know, the purity of the sport is always in question, like whenever technology comes into play. But like, I'm just wondering, like, if we had this technology ourselves, right, on the street, and I mean, have you ever whacked the throttle open on your bike? Our bikes are already way more powerful than we can handle, and like, imagine having the electronics that would allow us to actually harness that power. It's pretty interesting. I don't know. Even for myself, I'm starting to feel like, yeah, I can see why the riders are getting frustrated with the role that the electronics are playing.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. And so in effect, though, this is making the bikes easier to ride, and I'm not trying to, you know, take away from the talent and all of that, because like you say, it's the last couple of seconds, last few tenths of seconds that are what show the talent of one guy over another.
Right.
I think it
explains why Pedrosa and Stoner did so well their first year to some degree. I remember the people were saying that a lot in 2006, that it's a little bit unreal just how well those guys did, considering that in the past, especially when it was the two-stroke 500s, like, but there basically was no way a rookie was going to be able to go in and just and be able to win their second race the way Pedrosa did, for example. So the things like that, I mean, look at the way the rookies are doing now. It's like we've got a bunch of rookies in this year, and they all did quite well at the tests. I think that the learning curve isn't quite as steep, but yeah, I think when it comes to the actual how close they get, it's at a certain point it does become the talent and not the not the electronics. And I just wanted to ask you, who do you think has been the most impressive out of the rookies so far?
Out of the rookies here at the tests?
Yeah.
I'd have to go with Lorenzo. I mean, I thought he, just from what I've been seeing, I think he has got the pace. But, I mean, I don't know. Who do you think?
I agree. So Lorenzo and De Angelis are the guys who, actually, I would say that all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say except Toslund, actually. Toslund is the one guy who I expected to do better, and he's not.
Yeah, do you think that's some kind of superbike penalty? I mean, the other guys came up through the GP ranks.
Maybe it's an age penalty, too.
Yeah, yeah. Toslund's no spring chicken, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a possibility. I'm just sort of
He's more of a conservative guy. He approaches every problem in a more analytic way. Whereas these guys they really do get on and they want to ride as fast as possible, and they just like riding fast, you know. And I think Tosas is more of a planning type of rider. So we'll see how he does a little while from now, but. He did have good times. I think he was off like half a second off the top pace. Let me see this.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to find Toslund's times right now myself, and it's I didn't.
No, they're not. No, he's off. He's off by over a second.
Yeah,
a second and a half.
And
it's been pretty consistent through all the tests so far.
Yeah, an analytical way to. Is a good way to describe Toslund's riding style.
He can definitely get crazy when he needs to, but in general, he's a conservative rider.
Right.
I don't mean conservative like in terms of the racing strategy, but the way he I'll never be able to pronounce the name of this track. What was it? The new track at.
Vallelunga.
During the testing that he was doing there when they first got there, I mean, he was definitely one of the slower guys. So you put him in a new situation, and he's not, and it takes him a little while to warm up.
Yeah, and he's I think he's a thoughtful rider is mm-hmm. a way to put it. You know, he analyzes and knows what he needs to do and sort of does that. I think we saw that at least in Superbike the way. He didn't come back too well after his first championship, and then he just sort of, I don't know, recovered for you know, and just kind of came out and was consistent and good. But, and I mean, and yeah, moments of absolute brilliance and incredibly hard riding, but it still somewhat seemed more of a, I don't know, smooth and sort of thoughtful. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. really know a better word to describe it.
I like that.
A bit like Rossi, only not on quite the, godlike level of, you know, let's analyze the line as we're traveling around the corner at 95 miles an hour. But not much out of Kawasaki on the news front.
No, there was a couple of, I guess at Valencia and Sepang, there was more talk about John Hopkins was praising the bike, and he had some incredibly good times.
Right,
but in Jerez, they're pretty down there.
Yeah, well, different track. It's Jerez, very tight go-karty track. So the speed and this apparently is still going to possibly continue through. You know, Kawasaki still got that to work on. You've got to get the whole package going on and. Yeah. Just like I said, very quiet from the Jerez test. And Suzuki didn't even go. They went ahead to have their own private secret test in Australia. And so they're on double secret probation down there. and all the news that we came out of there was that Vermeulen had a lap faster than his race pace from the 2007 race. And that doesn't really tell a squat because he might have been on qualifying tires or, you know, who knows what.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's a sort of cryptic kind of press release.
So the Hondas are back. You know, Honda's definitely back. If it wasn't for Rossi and Stoner, I think it would be a Honda domination.
Yeah, it looks that way. And part of that is going to be due to their talent reserve, and part of it is just due to the Honda machine, I would think.
They're back.
Yes, exactly. Where's my favorite Nicky Hayden? He was fifth on day one at Jerez and sixth on day two. And about, like 7/10 off the pace. And yeah, both days, about 7/10 off the pace. Mm-hmm. I know on, which actually, and that's going to be, he didn't run a qualifying tire, and Pedrosa did. So that right there is probably that one lap accounting for the 7/10.
Right. Yeah. We also have Shinya Nakano, who's doing extremely well on the Honda.
I know, and that's good to see Shinya not sucking for a change.
Well, I think he's happy being back on the Bridgestones.
Probably.
For him, it's huge. I mean, it was pretty obvious. Both him and Tamada got ruined by the move from Bridgestone to Michelin. I think that's the impossible switch.
Yeah, exactly. One guy that didn't sort of perform up to expectations, Marco Melandri.
No. After the first test in Valencia, he said that the... he understands now how the Ducati works, and he figured out how to go fast, but he hasn't shown that yet. In fact, he's been very quiet. He hasn't said a thing. At least, I should probably check with my Italian source, see what's going on in the Italian rags. There hasn't been much from him.
Yeah, and that's is he going to go back to his random number generator style of just all over the map, and you never know what he's going to do or what?
That's a good point. I mean, has he ever done well at Jerez? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. You're the guy that would know that kind of thing off the top of your head. I'd have to start breaking out the books. So it's overall, promising stuff. Like I said, it's not, there's no world-shattering revelations or anything like that, but it's just a progression of interesting stuff. Ducati brought in quite a few test riders.
There's a photo of Niccolò Canepa, who was the super sport champion in 2006, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Talk about, we always talked about John Hopkins, practically dragging his elbows, or maybe dragging his elbows. This guy definitely is dragging elbows. I'll send you a photo. He needs elbow pads ASAP.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to take a look at him. Yeah.
It doesn't make him go faster, but...
yeah, exactly. It's not helping him. He beat Ant West and Shinichi Ito. And
right.
Those guys. Yeah. So, cool stuff. Then you also went to the motorcycle show, the International Cycle World, International Motorcycle Show, didn't you?
Yes. It's a tradition here in the household to take my kid and go to the show. And it was, there was nothing that big this year in terms of bikes introduced. But we mainly went to see the new Ducati, the 848, and the and to see the GP bikes. And on that front, I'm just really frustrated with the fact that not only does MotoGP, the MotoGP fan base have to fight to get the races seen on TV, the manufacturers not even interested in pushing the sport to the American public. It's like the only two teams that brought GP bikes to these shows in past years are Ducati and Yamaha. And this year it was you walk towards the Ducati area display, and the first thing you see is Casey Stoner's bike. It's beautifully lit from below. I would say 90% of the people there are always walking past it. They don't realize that it's, what it is. It's just funny when my son, who was seven, just screams, "Oh my God, it's Stoner's bike," and runs over. And there's all these people huh? And then, of course, Yamaha always brings Rossi's bikes there. And It's always fun to look at that bike. All the stickers and stuff, you know. And then, but then you go to Honda, and even in 2006 when Honda won the GP championships, there was not a single mention of Nicky Hayden. There was not a single mention, and this is the same thing this year. There was no Pedrosa stuff, no Hayden stuff, no MotoGP bike, not even the Repsol colors. At least in 2006, they had a Repsol replica CBR 600.
Yeah,
you know. But this year, nothing. Not even a single place where you could see Repsol colors. It was like it's just really strange. Suzuki had some AMA presence stuff there. They had their AMA bikes, super bikes, but nothing about MotoGP. Kawasaki, nothing about MotoGP. It's amazing. It's like the American market is it's almost like it's destined to be doomed. And the MotoGP is destined to be like the kind of like, you know, hardcore fan territory only.
Right. Well, it's the foreign sport that, you know, and that still chaps me because, you know, we have, there's a lot of Americans riding in MotoGP.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Formula One where, you know, there are no American drivers. You know, it's got Speed, first guy in, I don't know, whatever, 13 years or whatever it was. And he didn't do all that well. And then he got fired. And you know, and yet Formula One is more popular. And it's still, it's just one of those things. And the manufacturers, because they're, you know, these guys are, it's these shows, the International Motorcycle Show and all that, which I kind of am skeptical about the international part.
I think they go to Canada.
Yeah. And they have a lot of, you know, foreign manufacturers. So, they, you know, there's your international side. But they, you know, they're concerned with selling motorcycles. And what sells over here, you know, is not necessarily going to be, you know, the same stuff that's going to sell elsewhere. So Ducati, with their racing heritage, you know, Ducati's like Ferrari. They don't make you know, well, they have a couple of sort of almost adventure touring, sport touring models, but there's no cruisers or anything like that that are really, truly, you know, cruisers and things like that. They make fast motorcycles, and Honda just makes things all over the map. So they're going to be concentrating on selling their latest, you know, VTX 1800 or whatever, that kind of a thing. And it's just, I don't know, drifting too far from the roots, if you ask me, because Honda was a company that was founded on racing heritage remember it.
Exactly.
But it's the nature of the beast, and it is, you know,
I don't think it's like telling of the direction that those companies want to go in or anything like that, but I just think it's not that hard to bring some kind of memorabilia of the GP racing because there is a fan base here, and it's like, it's just a little frustrating, I guess.
Oh, I agree. I do agree. On that, Red Bull is coming out with commemorative cans of the champions of Red Bull, and Nicky Hayden's going to get one.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So you can buy, you can buy your Red Bull next month in a commemorative Nicky Hayden can. And, you know, I mean, if the companies like that, maybe, you know, the more exposure we get. Oh, so, and speaking of the whole Nicky Hayden thing, we had the MTV show last week, which, did you get a chance to watch that yet, or you have it recorded, or?
I have it recorded. I had not had a chance to watch almost anything.
It was good. I liked it. It wasn't faster, the movie faster. But then again, I don't think it was ever meant to be, and it was, it came out good, and a MotoGP fan's not, you're not really going to learn a whole lot. There was a few sort of interesting, you know, tidbits about Hayden and the whole Hayden family, of course, you know, and you're sort of following them around and watching him do his thing. But as for somebody that maybe does not know about MotoGP and particularly the MTV target audience, you know, it probably created a few new interested fans, I hope. Not sure what the ratings were like or anything on that. It's was in not the greatest time slot Friday night, but yeah, you never know. You know, people are maybe, you know, doing something or other, sitting around quiet evening at home type of a thing Friday and turn it on.
But, so, yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch it. They'll definitely try and catch it.
Yeah, and, you know, things like that. I mean, when Faster came out and then the DTK movie, that did actually generate interest for MotoGP. But from at least from the emails and postings and stuff that I saw at the time, it seemed like it was people that were already like Superbike fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember actually going to see there was a some kind of a event, motorcycle related event in Napa in 2004, and they were doing a screening of the show of the movie in some little tiny little theater that used to be a church or one of those things, and they were showing Faster Than. It was a very eclectic crowd that showed up to watch it. I was impressed by the number of cruisers that were in the parking lot.
Yeah, well, that's and that's kind of good. I mean, but the thing is to Daytona has been trying to convert the Bike Week cruiser, let's go down and cruise the boulevard and stuff crowd into race fans with pretty much limited results on that. It's two kinds of motorcycle base in America, and it's going to be difficult to get the hardcore solid cruiser types to be interested in racing. It's a different market, and I'm not sure where I'm going with that whole train of thought, but it's just an ongoing battle. And I mean, until they just need more exposure, and until we start seeing, you go into a 7-Eleven and you see a big stand up of Nikki Hayden holding out a can of Red Bull, that's going to be kind of a good thing. But until you get to that point, you haven't got enough front of the mind awareness for the sport in America for it to be really super popular. But on the other hand, I think that MotoGP as a whole, the sport, almost, it's not like they've got so much going on in the rest of the world that it's like, well, if we'll take the fan base that we have in America, but we're not going to spend an enormous amount of resources and time and effort trying to build it up to super heights, because it's just it's almost an impossible task. It'll be telling to see what happens with the second GP at Indianapolis, the home of motorsport and all that, somewhat closer to the population centers on the East Coast. I think it's going to cannibalize Laguna Seca's attendance, but I think that overall you'll have more people going to a GP, at least one GP, in 2008 in the United States than you will in 2007. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good thing.
That is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, just make a movie, four guys, middle-aged guys, get together and they ride MotoGP bikes across the country.
Yeah, Wild Hogs, only on sport bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You get cracking on that there, Jules. Sounds like a great project.
Definitely.
But very silly adventures. So, moving on.
It's going to be, we're in the moratorium, and I guess we should mention the fact that that Liam extended his contract in his role as the parts manager for Dantine.
It's good to hear, that Liam still got his job going on. I kind of know he wanted to move us to a different direction, but I think staying in MotoGP is a positive thing, even if he didn't exactly get maybe his dream job or whatever. I need to call Liam again. I haven't talked to him in a while.
I think he got really... he just sounds like he's been sick pretty much since middle of the year. He has never shaken off that. It's just been a very wary season for him, I think, traveling and all the weather, crazy weather we had this year. So,
yeah, and then those last flyaway races, I mean, it's pretty brutal. He's basically away from home for, I don't know what it was, like 6 weeks solid or something like
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah. And then the testing and all of that.
The plane is just a breeding ground.
Oh, yeah, it's a big germ tube. Yep. On an airplane, so yeah. Well, all right. We not the longest call in the world today, but I think we kind of covered some of the interesting stuff about
There's
testing.
There's probably a lot of people out there going, thank God.
Yeah.
It's over.
Should I make this guy shut up? But yeah, we'll continue to find something to talk about with MotoGP because it still exists and everything. We are going into December, so you're going to have the test ban, but there will be other stories. We still got Rossi's tax evasion news popping up. So if all else fails, we'll resort to gossip and what's that hard copy type of news rather than actual stuff about racing.
But, cool.
Yeah. So, all right. Thanks a lot, Jules. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, man. Ciao.
Bye. I'm a computer user, and I'm sure that almost all, if not absolutely all of you, are also computer users because you're listening to a podcast. So being a computer user, I actually use a laptop, and I'm also a motorcycle rider, so I need to take this laptop back and forth to work, and I've been searching for a good computer bag for a very long time. I used a sort of a standard kind of a top-loading soft-sided briefcase with a shoulder strap, and that actually worked pretty well. I would sling it crosswise across my shoulder and ride my bike, but it always sort of felt like it was kind of coming off the side, and it also didn't offer a whole lot of protection to the computer itself, being kind of a soft-sided bag. So I was constantly looking for something better, but I kept going back to that. Then I was lucky enough to get an Axio Fuse 06 backpack. Now, these are designed for motorcycle riders. The Fuse is actually designed as a laptop bag, and this all fits in nicely with MotoGP because Axio sponsored the Pramac Dantin team last year. So Liam had set that up, and I managed to get a hold of one of these Fuse bags from Axio, excellent company. They have another bag, which is based on their Swift bag, and that they sell as a Pramac replica, and they also have a Repsol replica, and these are hard backpacks, and the graphics are plastered across the hard shell of the backpack as Repsol or Pramac, as the case may be. But mine is the Fuse 06, which is all black, and it's actually covered in cloth. So it is a hard shell backpack, but then it has a cloth covering on top of that hard shell. Now, whether or not this backpack is going to stand up to actually falling off the motorcycle and sliding on your back down the street, I didn't test that. I felt that might be a bit above and beyond the call, but I did test almost everything else about this bag that I could think of. It's a really fantastic bag. I've got it sitting here next to me. It's really handsome, for starters. It's black, like I said. It's black cloth all on the outside, so it looks, a little businessy. There's a nice big Axio logo, but other than that, it's, going to be suitable enough where you can take it to work if you work in a sort of an office environment, and it's not too over the top or anything like that. That's so much motorcycle gear is. Not that the Repsol and the Pramac bags are going to be over the top, but they are a little flashier. But this particular Fuse bag, excellent stuff. Inside is just red. It's brilliant. Let's call it whorehouse red. And you open it up. It's striking looking because you got the black and the red. And if you unzip the bag completely, it opens up from the top like a clamshell, and it will sit there on the base because it's sort of, it makes itself a base, and it just sits there open. Your computer actually goes inside the hard shell portion, which is kind of away from your back, and there's a separate zipper pouch inside with a laptop compartment and a Velcro closure, and you can even get some more stuff inside the plastic shell because there's quite a bit of clearance between the computer and the outside. So this would offer a lot of protection in the event of a drop or something like that. Like I say, if you actually fly off the motorcycle, land on your back, you're asking a lot of any bag to protect a computer in that kind of a crash. But this could certainly stand up to a drop or something like that. Not that you want to try that. Then you've got also two large pouches that are on the side that is facing your back. And alongside and those are good for like the power adapter or a mouse or an iPod or all sorts of other things like that. And then underneath that, there's a sort of a document-sized pouch with Velcro closures again. And there's more pouches and pen pockets and things like that on the other side that faces, that it's basically alongside the computer. So as it folds open, you have access to your sort of documents. You can get the power adapter out of these large zipper pockets. There's a CD-sized pocket up top where you could put if you had a CD player or, again, an iPod or something like that. And then there's a little grommet thing at the top where you can poke the headphones out so you could even listen to your music while you're riding or just wearing the backpack or doing whatever. It's also, and this is one of the coolest things about this backpack, I think, besides being very well made, it's really solid, a lot of sturdy stitching and very padded, but it's ergonomically designed. So the the part that touches your back is curved and padded. And when I first put it on, this sounds hokey and cliche, but I had this on the very first time I was using it, had my computer in it. I was getting ready to get on my motorcycle, put the backpack on and everything, started up the motorcycle, did the usual sort of thing, got the helmet on. And I literally looked around for my computer bag. I'd sort of forgotten that I had this backpack on. It is that comfortable. It rides up nice and high like a backpack should. You've got adjustable straps, and there's a across the chest strap too that you can use, so they'll bring the shoulder straps in nice and snug if you want that. And there's strap keepers, which is important on a motorcycle backpack, because that tail, when you adjust the straps and you've got this sort of extra strap material and it's sort of hanging down like making a basically a tail, when you're riding along on the motorcycle, that whips around and hits you, and it's not much fun. But the Axio people thought of that, and they basically, it's just a sort of a piece of cloth sewn across the strap, but you can kind of tuck the strap up underneath that piece of cloth, and that keeps the strap up out of the way. Anybody who's been in the military and you've worn military bags and you've seen the little sort of a very, very thick rubber band, and you fold up the strap and kind of jam it under that rubber band, it's the same sort of an idea. And it works really well. And other than that, let's see, there's outside pockets on the Axio Fuse. There's not a lot of outside pockets going on. It does come with a separate sort of a pouch that's fastened by Velcro to one of these straps. And this is perfect size for an iPod, or maybe you could put a cell phone or something like that in there. I was a little skeptical because I'm not a big truster of Velcro. I've found that Velcro tends to come open sometimes when you're not sort of paying attention. But this has so much Velcro, and it's good, or a hook and loop fastener, I suppose it's probably supposed to be called, I've had my digital camera in there and had no worries. It has never even remotely started to come off or come open or anything like that. And the camera seems to be following me along nicely, strapped right there on my backpack strap. Now, like I said, Axio did the whole sponsorship with Pramac Dantin, so you might want to look at those because those do tie in with MotoGP better. Now, that bag is based on their Swift, and again, it's a hard shell bag with no fabric covering, so there's graphics on the outside. It's a striking-looking bag, very, very good, and I wanted to get one of those. Unfortunately, they're not designed as a laptop bag. You can use them to carry a laptop, but they don't have the true laptop pouch like the Fuse did. So I went ahead and I asked the folks at Axio if I could get one of the Fuses, just because that's what I really needed the backpack for, is to carry a laptop. But if your primary need for a backpack is just to carry some stuff, I would take a look at that. Like I said, there's the Repsol one, the Pramac one, and then they have the sort of no logo Swift model. And they also have the Forza, which is another hard shell backpack. And all of these are slightly different on the inside. And you just have to kind of take a look at their website. Or if you're lucky enough to live next to a store that stocks all of these backpacks, you can go down there and take a look and try them on. I think you'll find that they're very, very comfortable, very well-made and solid, good quality backpack specifically designed for motorcyclists or bicyclists for wearing. Because, you know, when you're sort of leaning over and you've got your hands on the bars and all of that sort of thing, a regular backpack can tend to dig in certain spots or things like this, and it's not very comfortable. I've tried computer laptop backpacks in the past that were designed more for business use, and they're not that great. You can feel the laptop, and it almost like the laptop is being strained, and it's kind of torqued across your spine. So one, it's uncomfortable for your spine, and two, there's always this sort of fear that you're kind of putting some stress on the laptop that might not necessarily be a really good idea. So I'm super happy with the Axio bag, and I think you would be too if you took a look at it. So if you do want to go take a look at their website, is at axio-usa.com. That's axio-usa.com. If you're an international listener, they have websites all over the place. Just Google for Axio and you will find the closest website to you. If you go up there and you take a look and you decide you want to go ahead and purchase one, they do sell direct from their websites. Tell them that I sent you from MotoGPOD. I'd like them to know that their review did not go unnoticed. It's good quality stuff, and I really appreciate it, and I'm glad that they're sponsoring MotoGP. I think that's cool that we've got an American company out there involved in MotoGP. You might have seen some pictures of some of the Pramac Dantin Umbrella Girls last year wearing these Pramac backpacks, and I thought it was pretty cool. And it's a good thing that Liam managed to get that all set up. If you want one of those Pramac bags, they're still available on their website for sale, but you might want to hurry up because I'm not sure how much longer, what with the whole shakeup and change we've got going on with Antantine. Now, they may have a new design for next year. I don't know. They couldn't tell me those sort of details this yet, but the fuse was just most recently redesigned. So if you want to go with a slightly more understated look of the fuse, then go ahead and get one. They aren't the cheapest bags in the world, but you get what you pay for. And these lists for the fuse, I think, is $139. The Pramac bag is $169. You can probably find them in various stores for a little bit less or that sort of thing. But when you do, you get what you pay for. And if you want a quality bag to carry around your laptop, which is a significant investment, I encourage you to take a look at the Axio bag. I'm really super happy with mine. I haven't had any complaints with it so far. All right, so that, I think, kind of covers our talking about motorcycle laptop bags, which I thought blended in nicely with the rest of the show. That's going to do it for tonight's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. Any comments or questions or hate mail can be sent to me at bob@motogpod.com. I like getting your email. I try to answer all of it. Some things have been falling through the cracks a little bit lately, what with the holidays and general all-around sort of stress and running around. But I do appreciate the emails. I always like getting them. If you'd like to send emails to Jules, you can send them to him at popmonkey@motogpod.com. That's pop, like P-O-P, Papa Oscar Papa, monkey@motogpod.com. And I think that's going to about do it till next week. So we will talk to you later. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.